Okay, but first of all, maybe one question is, why should we talk about quantum reference frames in a conference about indefinite causality? And the reason, so to explain this, let me resort to the example of the gravitational switch. So this is the gravitational version of the quantum switch that we have already discussed in more than one talk today. And in this case, so I don't want to focus on the details, and I think you're going to hear more about that during the conference. But so here we have the two local observers, A and B, are in a non-classical space-time. So we have a mass here in a superposition, and basically the local clocks of A and B are time dilated according to the position of the mass, so in a superposition. And this superposition of masses realizes the indefinite causal structure, so is determines the indefinite causal structure in this case. And so the important aspect is this non-classicality of the space-time, and this is what we would like to address with the quantum reference frame formalism. So first of all, let me tell you what we mean by a reference frame in physics, usually. So by reference frame, we usually mean a set of axes and the state of motion. And so usually reference frames are treated as abstract entities that are useful for us to fix the point of view from which observations are carried out. And this is a useful notion because of the principle of covariance, which tells us that the laws of physics are the same regardless of our choice of the reference frame. And now imagine that we want to move to a different reference frame to this initial one. So what we do in quantum mechanics is we apply a reference frame transformation that we usually describe as a unitary operation. So this can be a translation or a boost. And what I would like you to focus your attention here is that here there is this parameter, so x0 in the case of translations and v in the case of Galilean boosts, that encodes the relation between the old and the new reference frame. So this is not a dynamical quantity. This is something that is given. It's a parameter. And then once we have this transformation, we can also transform the dynamical law, so the Hamiltonian, in this way. And we say that we have a symmetry if in the final reference frame, the Hamiltonian has the same functional form as in the initial reference frame. So, but when we think about it a bit more carefully, then we realize that every time we carry out an observation, we use physical systems. And every time, and we also use physical objects to fix the point of view. So for instance, if I want to measure the distance between this desk and the blackboard, I will just put a ruler on the blackboard and I will measure the distance to this table. And the blackboard and the ruler are both physical objects. And physical systems are ultimately quantum. So for instance, they can be in a superposition or entangled. So I can have a ruler in a superposition of two positions, for instance. So the question that we want to ask is, can we associate a reference frame to a quantum particle that is in a superposition? For instance, so superposition or even entangled. So let's start again, and let's say that we want to attach a reference frame to a physical, to any physical system. So this implies that we need to consider the dynamical degrees of freedom of the reference frame. And we also want a formalism that works if our physical systems are classical or quantum. So our goal is to generalize the principle of covariance. So this means that we want to state this principle in such a way that the laws of physics are the same irrespective of the choice of the quantum reference frame, so not just of the reference frame. So, and this is an outline of what I will be talking about. So first of all, I will introduce the formalism with the transformation and the notion of the relative state and the dynamics. And then I will give you three examples of transformations. So the first one is we'll generalize the spatial translations to a superposition of spatial translations. Then we're going to consider the superposition of Galilean boosts, and then an extension of the weak equivalence principle in quantum reference frames. Okay, so an important notion of the formalism is that we use a relational approach. So this means that only relational quantities are meaningful in our description, and that we do not need an absolute reference frame. So the way this is formulated is, imagine that we have a set of n particles here, and this black box around would be what we would usually describe as the absolute space. So basically, in our formalism, we want to get rid of this black box. So we do not want to consider it. And so, for instance, we can pick this orange particle as our quantum reference frame. And then we will have these n minus one relational degrees of freedom that describe the positions of the other particles relative to the particle that we chose as our reference frame. And now, if we want to move to a different reference frame, so if we want to pick this particle instead, then we will still have n minus one relational degrees of freedom, but you see that they are reshuffled, and we will have to re-express these n minus one degrees of freedom as a function of the previous n minus one degrees of freedom. So to make things a bit more concrete, let us consider three particles, where C is our initial quantum reference frame, A is the final quantum reference frame, and B is a quantum system. So in the relational approach, this means that we only describe relational quantities. So we will describe the position of B relative to C and the position of A relative to C initially. And C does not describe its own degrees of freedom. So we have 2 degrees of freedom when we consider these three particles here. And then when we move to the quantum reference frame of A, then we will describe the position of B relative to A and the position of C relative to A. And if you do some vector composition here, you will see that this is the relation between the positions relative to A and the positions relative to C. So in particular, the position of C is you just obtain it by inverting this arrow, and then the position of B is XB minus XA. And now, let us imagine that we have this initial reference frame that is the point of view of C, and we have this particle B that is described from this point of view using this set of axes. And now we want to move to a reference frame that is simply translated by this amount alpha from the initial point of view. And in quantum mechanics, we know how to do that. We just apply a unitary operator that is a translation operator, where this parameter alpha is the displacement that, so it's basically the relative position between the new reference frame centered here and the old reference frame centered here. But now what happens if instead of having this very sharp position here, we want to describe the relative position between B and A, where A is this quantum state. In principle, we do not know which position to pick here, because, well, this is displayed, this is spread. And so one possibility is, okay, but we know that quantum mechanics is linear. So we take seriously the linearity of quantum mechanics, and we translate by every possible position on the real axis. But then, since we know that, for instance, this position here, where the peak of the wave function is, will count more than this position here, for instance, then we will weigh the translation on the state of A. So what happens if we do that is that we get this operator, where we have added a Hilbert space. So we added the Hilbert space of the quantum reference frame, and we promoted this parameter of the transformation to an operator on the Hilbert space of the quantum reference frame. And this operator allows us to generalize the transformation and to consider the situations in which the reference frame is not sharply localized. And now here I wrote this as a product state, but nothing prevents us to consider an entangled state. And the full transformation, I still need to add this operator here, P, PAC, that we call parity swap operator. And the role of this operator is to send, is to realize basically this line of the transformation. So it ensures that when I swap between the perspective of A and C, then from the point of view of A, C is seen in the correct way, basically. And this transformation is unitary, so I can just transform the initial state, rho A, B, C, unitarily by applying this transformation, and I will get the quantum state from the point of view of A, of B and C. So to get more familiar with this transformation, we can consider some examples. The first example is when the quantum reference frame is sharply localized around some position. So in this case, we expect that we will get the usual translation. So from the point of view of A, we should see B rigidly translated by this amount here, and C in minus this position. And if we apply this operator here to this state, this is exactly what we get. So B is just rigidly translated, and C is in minus the position that A had from the point of view of C. A slightly more complicated situation is when A, so this is still a product state, and A is in a superposition of two very sharply localized states in position basis. And so for each amplitude here, we expect to see something like that. But this time, this is in a superposition of two different positions. So what will happen here is that when A is here, I will see this relative distance to C and this relative distance to B, which will just be rigidly translated. And when A is here, I will see this relative distance to C and this relative distance to B. So what I get is an entangled state from the perspective of A, where the relative positions are the ones that I would expect are just linearly obtained. And this shows a very general feature of this quantum reference frame transformation, that is the fact that entanglement and superposition are quantum reference frame dependent. So this is not something that I can fix a priori, but according to the perspective that I take, a quantum state can be entangled or not. And also the converse is true. So if I start from a state that is entangled for A and B, but that is perfectly correlated, so the relative distance between A and B is always L, then if I move to the perspective of A, what I see is a product state. So this time the state is separable, and B will always be at this distance L from the point of view of A, while C will be in a superposition of positions. And to take this to the extreme, we can consider an EPR state of this form. And again, here you see that the relative distance is always this capital X. So if I go to the quantum reference frame of A, what we see is B always localized around this position, big X, and C will be totally spread out the whole space. Okay. Then, so we said that quantum reference frames are associated to physical systems. And so this means that they also have some Hamiltonian associated to them. So whenever we introduce a quantum reference frame, we have to consider also the Hamiltonian of the quantum reference frame, so of A, from the point of view of C. And when we move to the description of A, we will have to describe the Hamiltonian of B and C from the perspective of A. And classically, when we change a reference frame, we apply a canonical transformation. And the way we write this canonical transformation is we have to re-express the old Hamiltonian in the new variables. And then we add the partial time derivative of the generator of the canonical transformation. And this gives us the new Hamiltonian in the new reference frame. So what happens in the quantum case? So let's assume that from the perspective of C, we have a Schrödinger equation, where we have a quantum state of A and B and a Hamiltonian of A and B, all from the perspective of C. And now we want to move to A's reference frame. So in order to do that, we apply a quantum reference frame transformation that at this level has nothing to do with the one that I showed you a few slides ago, but it's just a unitary transformation. So the only assumption we have here is that S is unitary. And if we do that, we find, again, a Schrödinger equation. So this means that the evolution in the new reference frame is still unitary. And the new Hamiltonian is related to the old Hamiltonian in this way, which is very similar to what we had in the previous slide for the classical case. And the quantum state is just mapped unitarily to the new quantum state from the perspective of A. So now notice that compared to the usual way we would describe a reference frame transformation, this also includes the Hamiltonian of A. So this is a Hamiltonian on, so initially we had the Hamiltonian of the reference frame of the quantum system, and at the end we have the Hamiltonian of the quantum system B and of the old reference frame C. So this is an extension in this sense. And this definition allows me to tell you what we mean by an extended symmetry transformation. So we say that a quantum reference frame is an extended symmetry if the new Hamiltonian has this. So if I start from a Hamiltonian, which depends on the mass, the position, and the momentum of A and B from the point of view of C, and I transform it with this S transformation, I have a final Hamiltonian that has the same functional form as the initial one, but now all the labels A are swapped to label C. So this is what we mean. And this has a general form. So this is the most general form in this, just in one special dimension. And when A and B do not interact initially. So this is the most general thing we can find where. So this is the core of the transformation. So what happens is that this would be a parameter for usual reference frames. And here what we do is we promote the parameter to an operator by using the equations of motion. So this can be a function of time. It depends on the type of transformation that we want to perform. And it's just a straightforward generalization of the usual change of reference frame. And so this F describes the relationship between the old and the new reference frame. But then, since this is basically an operator in the Heisenberg picture, and we're applying this transformation to a state that is in the Schrödinger picture, we have to map the state of A back to the Heisenberg picture by applying, this operator here. And then this is not the end of the story, because we also need to swap the equations of motion of A and C. And this is achieved by this generalized parity swap operator that is a bit more general than the one we have seen that just maps x to minus x, p to minus p, and swaps the labels A and C. And this takes care of mapping the equations of motion of A to minus the equations of motion of C from the point of view of A. And finally, we need to map back the state of the quantum reference frame to the Schrödinger picture. So we do this with this propagator. And okay, so now we can see an example that I hope will clarify a bit. So let us consider the translations. So first of all, we have to define what we mean by a translation. So usually a translation is something that is rigid and does not change in time. But if I have a quantum system that is evolving in time according to a Hamiltonian, in principle, I do not know what to define as a translation. So what we do is we have this system evolving. We just fix some time. And we take the state of the system at this time, say time zero. And then we take the relative positions to the system at this specific time. So, for instance, let us consider the state of A and B at some time zero, and just for simplicity, A will be just in a superposition of two very sharp positions, and B is any quantum state. And again, for simplicity, let's just consider the free particle Hamiltonian. So now we want to, basically, this state will evolve in time. We can put it in the Schrödinger equation. We'll have some, this will be the initial condition. We will have some solution. But everything will be described. So we take this as the, we associate the quantum reference frame to this state here. And the way this is done is through this operator. So here you can recognize that the core of the transformation is the transformation to relative positions that I had a few slides ago. So basically what happens is that if, imagine that this is applied to a state at time t, then we go back to the state at time zero with this operator. Then this goes to the relative position of b at time t minus the position of a at time zero, that is this state here, and then we re-evolve it forward to have the full quantum state. And if we if we transform the Hamiltonian with this transformation here, then we find that the Hamiltonian has the same functional form, so it's still a free particle. But wherever I had A here, I have C here. So instead of PA, I have pi C, and instead of MA, I have MC. And so this is what we mean when we say that we have an extended symmetry transformation. Okay, so this is what concerns the superposition of Galilean translations. So now, the second example that I would like to show you is the superposition of Galilean boosts. And just to fix the idea, so a Galilean boost is a transformation to a reference frame that is moving with a constant and uniform velocity from the point of view of the initial reference frame. So now what we want to do is to consider a quantum reference frame that is moving in a superposition of velocities from the point of view of the old reference frame. And the way we do that, so we consider, again, a free particle Hamiltonian for A and B from the point of view of C. And then we take a state for A and B at time t that, okay, this could be anything, but just for simplicity, we take it to be a superposition of these two velocities, v1 and v2. And we want to go to the frame of this associated to this particle here. And the way we do that, so we take a boost. So this is the core of the transformation again, where here we have, this would be the velocity operator, so obtained through the equations of motion. This would be the velocity. And this is the generator of the Galilean boost. And then we have this generalized parity swap. So this is, again, a bit more complicated than the one we had in the case of translations, because this also rescales the masses of A and C. And this is done to make sure that if C sees A moving with velocity v, then A sees C moving with velocity minus v. So this is a consistency in the equations of motion, and it's achieved by adding this additional condition to the parity swap. And then we also have these two unitary evolutions at the beginning and at the end. Okay, so if we do this, and we, so again, we start from this free particle Hamiltonian and from this initial state, what we get in the final quantum reference frame of A is, again, a free particle Hamiltonian, but where all the labels A are turned into labels C. So this means that, again, this is also a case in which the quantum reference frame transformation is an extended symmetry. And the final state, so when A moves with velocity V1, then we have that C moves with velocity minus V1 from the point of view of A, and B is boosted by V1. And when A moved with velocity V2, then C moves with velocity minus V2 from the point of view of A, and B is boosted by V2. And so this is also intuitive, and this is what we would expect if we just apply quantum mechanics linearly. And again, you can notice here that this is another example in which we started from a state that is separable, and we end up with a state that is entangled in the final quantum reference frame. So the last thing that I would like to tell you is the weak equivalence principle, is how we can generalize the weak equivalence principle using this formalism for quantum reference frames. And first of all, let's recap what we mean by weak equivalence principle. So what we mean is that the physical effects as seen from a reference frame moving with constant and uniform acceleration are indistinguishable from those as seen in a uniform gravitational field. And the way this is sometimes phrased is that if the inertial mass is the same as the gravitational mass, then A is equal to G. And now, and we can picture in this way, where from the point of A is accelerated, and if we stand on A, then we will see C and B as if they were in a uniform gravitational field, where this G is minus A. And so now, if we want to consider the quantum reference frame version of this, okay, I think you understood more or less how it goes. So we want to take everything that used to be a parameter and we promote it to an operator. So in this case, we want to say that the physical effects as seen from a reference frame moving in a superposition of constant and uniform accelerations are indistinguishable from those as seen in a superposition of uniform gravitational fields. So basically, it means that the acceleration becomes an operator and G also becomes an operator. And the picture will change in this way. So A will move in a superposition of accelerations. And what we would like to show is that if we go with a transformation, with a quantum reference frame transformation to the frame that is moving in a superposition of accelerations, we see in particular B moving in a superposition of uniform gravitational fields. So to make this a bit more mathematically sound, we can consider an initial Hamiltonian that is the free particle, so the kinetic term, plus a potential in which A is moving, that we take as a piecewise linear potential. So this means that it's linear, but the slope of this potential changes according to the region in which the state is. And then we choose as initial state a superposition of two Gaussian states for A. And we make sure that each Gaussian state, so the variance of each Gaussian state is such that the state basically totally falls into one single slope. So in this psi 1 will fall in this region, and this psi 2 will fall in this other region, and there won't be, it won't go into the regions with other slopes. And if under these assumptions, this psi 1 effectively moves as if it was accelerated with constant acceleration A1 given by this formula. And psi 2 will move as if it's constantly accelerated by A2 that is given by this formula. And now the transformation to this quantum reference frame that is given by this that is moving in this superposition of accelerations is given by this operator here, where this again is the core of the transformation, and in particular QT is the generalization of the operator that Daniel Greenberger gave for the to move to a reference frame that is constantly accelerated. So it's basically the same operator, but where A has a hat on it. And these again are the usual propagators. If we apply this operator here to the initial state, sorry, to the initial Hamiltonian, what we get is this new Hamiltonian of B and C here. And the initial state instead is mapped to the state where if A had a state psi 1, so if A was moving with acceleration A1, B, so we apply to B the standard transformation for to the accelerated reference frame with acceleration A1. And if A moved with acceleration A2, we apply to B the standard transformation with acceleration A2. And now here you can see that you also have this term here in the in the Hamiltonian that looks very much like, so this would be like a G and QB. So this looks very much like a system moving in a superposition of uniform gravitational fields. And it is in this way because also this state transforms correctly. So basically, we still retain the fact that B is accelerated in a superposition, basically. Okay, so that's all I wanted to tell you. And what I've presented here is an operational and relational formalism for quantum reference frames. And the question that we would like to address is how we can describe the world from the point of view of a quantum system that is that is in a quantum relationship to the initial reference frame. And we want to have a quantum reference frame associated to this system. And we have seen that key to that for that is that we need to find a more general law to change the reference frame. And this leads to generalization of the notion of covariance that we have explored in the two cases of the superposition of spatial translation, the superposition of Galilean boosts. And we have also seen that we can use this formalism to generalize the weak equivalence principle to quantum reference frames. And that's all, thank you.
So there are lots of questions I could ask, but I'll ask one. So you said at one point you get, I think from the viewpoint, if there's a superposition of A, you go to that frame, the other becomes entangled, is that right?
Yeah.
Is it obvious and straightforward or highly non-trivial to generalize this to multipartite entanglement?
Well, so I guess it depends what you mean precisely. So if you just want to consider more particles and then pick one of these particles as your quantum reference frame and go to the quantum reference frame of this particle, then I would say that you could do the same by just treating all the other particles that you have added like the B particle. So basically B could be a composite system, basically, and you just act with the transformation on this full system. And you see what the description will be from the point of view of the particle. If what you want to do...
Well, I guess what I'm wondering, so suppose I had an entangled state, I could go backwards to get the one that's superposed and not entangled. So suppose I have non-trivial tripartite entanglements, Svetlikny qualities, inequality is violated, all that stuff. Is it obvious how to go to a state where you no longer have that entanglement
Okay.
some other, or
no, I think
maybe you've done it. Is it easy? Is it not trivial?
I think in the general case, it is not trivial. And I don't even know if it is always possible if you have just a general multiparted entangled state to go to a state, to a quantum reference frame in which the state is not entangled anymore. So if this is your question.
That's what I was getting
at.
So
okay.
The answer is not known at this point in time.
No.
Okay.
What questions? Okay, so I saw you first. Okay, so
in special relativity, just classical relativity, if you know what things look like from the point of view of one observer, that's enough information for them to deduce what things will look like from any other frame. So if you see a baseball flying past at some velocity v relative to you, you can basically, that's enough information to see what things look like for that baseball. But is there a similar kind of symmetry in the quantum case? If I know what the quantum state is from one quantum reference frame, is that enough information to know what it is from any other reference frame in the system?
I would say no, because you have some freedom in how you want to describe the transformation. So the way you define the transformation is not unique. And there are different ways in which it can be non-unique. For instance, you can just rotate in the phase space, and you go to a different set of relational variables, for instance. And this gives you a different state. And you also have the freedom of applying a different, so you can apply a superposition of translations, for instance, or a superposition of boosts. And these are two different transformations, and they give you a different final state. And then you just have to decide, so you have to fix the reference frame to which you want to go. And this is not, so it's not as simple as I go to the reference frame of this particle.
Oh, I see, because what's part of what's not defined is what the reference frame is that you want to jump into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Fabio.
Yeah, so is there any meaning to the order of operators in the generators of the quantum reference frame transformations? So you have some, in general, so if you have just generators of translation, you just have x times p, so I suppose it just gives you a phase if you swap it. So
well, no, they commute because it's x a p b.
Oh, they all
so
commute.
It's, yeah.
Okay.
There are different Hilbert spaces.
I'm going to give Adam the first question.
So the number of classical bits I need to describe a state is measured by the Schmidt rank of the cheapest bipartition that I can find. So what's always struck me about this is that if you can map from an entangled state to superposition, I could then do a basis transformation into representation of the Hilbert space where I only need a single number to describe that the entire wave function. So it seems like I had a very expensive in memory state, and then I changed my point of view, and now I have a really cheap one. I was just wondering where this extra number went. That's what always struck me.
I don't know.
Fair enough. We'll talk about it later.
Does anything, this is another one of those anything non-trivial happen questions. You did the Schrodinger equation for a single particle. What if you have fermions, use the Pauli equation? Can anything non-trivial happen, or does it all straightforwardly carry through?
So if you want to transform field theory equation, then you also have to take care of time. And time should be.
No, it's not field theory, it's Pauli equation, right? Two component spinner.
Okay, so not the full Dirac equation.
Yeah, I'm willing to live non-relativistically with this for a while.
Okay.
So it might be that something non-trivial happens with the spin or something.
Yeah, so I guess you would have to ensure that the the full quantum state still has the correct symmetry or
yeah,
in the
that's what I'm thinking.
Frame. Yeah, and I mean we haven't tried that, but
okay.
Okay, so this is kind of how much time do we have?
We could actually. We have another. Oh, sorry, we have just a short time.
Okay, so I've been maybe more. I've been discussing with Esteban recently about your work, and we learned about the paper by Alex Smith and Robert Mann on these Galilean invariant systems. And so it appears to me that there's a good way to understand your notion of the particles as seen from the point of view of Alice Bob and so forth in the framework. But somehow I came to the somewhat paradoxical conclusion that these particles, these relational particles, somehow seem to have zero mass or something like that, because the center of mass, if one properly performs the this Galilean twirling and you separate it,
mm-hmm.
somehow these effective particles that you define, they seem to have zero mass in order for the total mass to make sense.
Why is that? I don't understand.
Because somehow there is a way to decompose your, there is this procedure of starting the global description and then by twirling to get rid of the gauge degrees of freedom. If I understood all your work,
so I think that there we also had a relational state, and the idea is okay, you start with some background description of your particles, and then the idea is you don't know anything about the background frame they're all defined with respect to, so you twirl average over all positions and after the state there. But there, you really take into account all of the masses of all of your particles, and you can ask questions, okay, what happens when the mass of your reference particle gets really big? You can recover some possible motion. So you do have that knob that you can play with. And as here, the description is a little different in the sense that, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're starting off with writing down a state from, and that's interpreted as being already in the perspective of a reference frame. So the two ways that the relational states are assigned, I think, are slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
Our understanding was that actually the difference comes from kind of assuming effect. If you postulate that the center of mass has zero momentum somehow, that would reduce to.
Yeah. It's if you project onto the zero momentum to central mass momentum, then you get the state from there.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, there's sort of two things. I mean, one, you could impose a constraint and say that the center of mass momentum has to be zero, so the sum of all momentum equals zero, and I think you can, if you've done work on that. But the other thing is when you twirl over all Galilean loose, what you basically get is the relational degrees of freedom, the relational coordinates in the center of mass, they basically have to do this twirl, you get a tensor product state, you get the decoherence channel in the center of mass. So you lose all the information in the center of mass.
Fine, but I mean, in this relational subsystem which contains the relational degrees of freedom, you can parameterize it as describing any two particles relative to the third.
Yes.
But my point is that if someone possessed, if that was just a lack of knowledge about the center of mass, I mean, somehow these effective particles that are there should have zero mass. Right?
Well, that's
stage. Maybe this is breaking up into a sort of discussion. So we'll have, you can have that later because we're here all week. We have a question from Barbara.
Question about this was the beginning. I was wondering how quantum this really is. So imagine if you had one reference frame which is well defined, and then one which is a too narrow distribution, sort of position,
mm-hmm.
and then a third one which is a wider distribution. And then you wanted to go to the reference frame of the second thing that is curved, which is too narrow distribution.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that if you went to that reference frame, it would look like a classical version of entanglement, right? The first reference frame, which was well defined, it would split into distribution of two, but it would condition the distribution of the wider distribution.
Yeah.
So when this one is on the left, the wider distribution is on the left, and when it's on the right. So I'm wondering if. Is this how quantum? It seems like you can look at the classical version.
I think you can look at classical. You can think about this distribution on figures as a classical distribution, but we don't do that.
Yeah.
So we associate cats to that and make them in a position.
Sure, sure. Another question about the weak appearance principle. I don't know if I fell asleep during the time or I didn't understand where gravity came in. Like you had a reference frame which was in a superposition of accelerations, and then you got another object which was in a superposition of accelerations, but I don't see a gravity there.
So this is basically a potential, okay? And this would be the an acceleration operator that usually, so when you, the statement of the weak equivalence principle normally in the standard quantum reference, standard reference frames is basically here you get mb a, so minus mb a qb. Okay, so, and you say that this is moving in a uniform gravitational field. And here we have the same statement, but where this is an operator, which is in a superposition because this tells you that this moves in a superposition, basically uniform gravitational fields. So we assume the standard version, that is this equation with this as just A, that is a parameter, just a number. And we find that the superposition version also applies.
Just isn't it just the fact that that normally a person in an elevator that's accelerating thinks everything else is in a uniform gravitational field?
Yeah,
you're saying
that.
If that's true, a superposed person in a superposed accelerating elevator thinks the world is a superposed gravitational field.
Yes.
Yes.
That's all it is.
That's it. Yeah.
Not to diminish the work, but I mean that's what it is, right?
Yeah. This is what it is. Yeah.
Well, so one question. At the very beginning, you mentioned the gravitational switch.
Yeah.
And you said that was a justification for the indefinite causal structure. And I had the sense you were going to come back to that.
I think Esteban will come back to that on Thursday. Yeah.
So there will be a part. Will be an act two. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So then let's thank Flaminio again.